Well, welcome to Rebel Storytellers Podcast number 7, lucky number 7. My name is Brad.
My name is Steve.
Rebel Storytellers is a community of writers, thinkers, performers, thought leaders of various kinds, and we have one singular mission, and that is to spark hope in this world. And we do that in 3 ways, Steve.
We do.
Yeah. One way is our blog, new content posted every weekday where we riff on a 4-letter word theme.
That word for this month is gift, G-I-F-T. We have a new word every month. Last month was home. Lots of great stuff going on over there, so make sure you check that out.
We also have live events throughout Cincinnati and hopefully beyond, and then we do this podcast.
Yeah, and the next live event is January, right?
Yeah, January 23rd and 24th.
Yeah, and information for that also on rebelstorytellers.com.
Yep, that's a one-man show with Joe Boyd, and he's doing the show of Exodus, and tickets are going fast, so good stocking stuffers for the holidays.
Yeah.
Do they do stockings on any other holiday besides Christmas, though?
Flag Day?
Flag Day. There's well known for for stockings.
Did you never hang stockings up for Flag Day?
You know, we would always hang mittens.
But mittens?
But not socks.
That doesn't make any sense.
So this episode, we are talking about the F word.
Failure?
Failure is it.
I was going to say something else, but then I remembered that this podcast is PG-rated.
That's right. We want the kids to be listening. So we're going to have a couple different segments talking about that. But before we jump in, how was your weekend?
Well, Bradley, this was an interesting weekend for me. You were there.
Mm-hmm.
So on Friday night, we were hanging out at a local pub, and this guy sort of randomly came up to me and was pointing out these other people in the bar. And he said they were lawyers, which I don't know why that mattered. And he kept saying he wanted me to go take a lap with him around the lawyers. I don't know why, like it was a lawyer zoo or something. And we were going to check them all out. And I didn't want to, so I said no. And he said, oh, come on, take a lap. And he was slightly intoxicated.
A very thirsty fella.
Yeah, he had had 1,000 or 2,000 drinks. And I kept telling him no, and he kept asking me. And so finally he was like, well, go have a smoke with me. And I was like, well, I don't smoke. And he's like, come on, man, let's go get a smoke. And I said, I don't smoke. And he said, oh, man, you were rolling my cigarettes earlier. And that confused me for lots of reasons because I thought that you rolled doobies. Doobies?
Doobie.
Is that what the kids call them?
Doobie. You can roll doobies and cigarettes. I hear.
Yeah, but it just, to me, you would just go to the store and buy like a pack of cigs at like the local 7-Eleven. Uh-huh. So I don't understand why you would roll them, but he's like, no, you rolled. And I said, no, I didn't. I don't even smoke. And then some jerk stumbled by.
I wouldn't say stumbled.
You.
I was going to the bathroom.
And you said.
Well, the guy said to me, hey, is this guy hand roll his cigarettes? And I said, yeah, that's all he does is hand roll cigarettes.
Right. And so he thought you were being serious because he was drunk. And so he got mad at me. And he smacked my drink out of my hand. The hardest smack ever. Yeah. I don't know how the glass didn't shatter everywhere, but he smacked the drink out of my hand. It hit the ground. He called me a liar. And then I said, so this is PG, so I said, well, golly gee, sir, what the what?
What the what?
I don't remember what he said to me, but it set me off. And I wanted to fight the dude.
Right.
And so I was like, I'll fight you, sir. And like you jumped in between us.
I stood there like the wall of reason.
Yeah, something like that. And then he like sort of started walking away. My wife went sprinting to get a bouncer.
Right.
And they let him out. And then the establishment bought me another drink, which was kind of them.
I thought that was a nice gesture.
Yeah. And proof that I was in the right and the drunk gentleman was in the wrong.
And then everyone said, way to go, Brad. Hip, hip, hooray.
Oh, was I must have been in the bathroom.
You were cutting up the ticker tape for my parade.
But that was our Friday night.
So that guy failed at letting people just drink their drinks and hold drinks in their hand just normally.
Failed at being a normal human being.
Failed at being a normal dude. So that gets us into this episode where we talk about failure. Should we tell them about what happened before that and maybe why you were kind of all jacked up?
Earlier in the day, you and I had a situation.
I mean, a situation is a strong word there, Wolf Blitzer.
Do you want to tell people about that?
I could.
All right.
So we tried one of the main reasons that this podcast is about failure is because you and I together failed at making a podcast last Friday.
Explain the failure. How did we fail?
Well, so Friday was a busy day here at the Rebel Pilgrim HQ, and I didn't communicate well with the rest of the gang, so I didn't know what their schedule was in the afternoon, but I invited you up anyways and thought that we could just kind of throw something together in the final hours of the afternoon, and everyone kind of started to leave the office, and Joe had a conference call, and Isaac only had 20 minutes, and so we had a good idea, but just not enough time to execute on anything. And I believe, if I am summarizing correctly, you were just frustrated with the lack of structure and planning that went into it.
Yeah, I have this weird condition where I really like organization and structure.
Ugh.
and plans. And so what happens when all of that gets thrown off is I emotionally shut down.
Yeah. I can attest to that. That's what you did.
Which is, it's kind of weird. Like, from 1 second, I was just normal, amazing me.
Affable Steve.
And then as soon as I realized that there was chaos and there wasn't a plan, it's like every emotion in my body just drains out of my toes. And I can't even, like, I can't fake things very well.
You couldn't even, like, you weren't even willing to, like, joke around to get out of it.
No.
You were just, like, in a dark, weird place.
Yeah. And it's weird because I think part of me wants everyone to suffer. Like, I don't want to make a joke because then someone would laugh and they wouldn't be suffering. And I wanted you to suffer.
Yeah.
And so we made up, though, sort of.
Yeah.
I was still sort of mad at you that night.
Yep.
And then you sent me a very lovely text apologizing.
I did.
And I ignored it,
yep.
I think.
Very healthy for a communications professor.
And then later that night, you threw me under the bus with your rolling the cigarettes.
No, later that night, I saved your life from getting smashed in.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I mean, I get it. Like, around Rebel Pilgrim, we're pretty one of our top values is improvisation and collaboration. And so when we like to just get together and, like, figure stuff out on a whim, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, and it didn't work. And we failed a little bit and then decided to talk about that because I had a post that just went up this week about failure, and we thought, well, why don't we just focus on failure for a bit?
Yeah. And that's a good segue because if you're following along at rebelstorytellers.com, Monday Brad wrote about the gift of failure and how one of his sort of big failure moments in life has altered your course and led you into this really healthy place. So I always like behind-the-scenes stories. As I was reading that, as a reader, I just wanted to ask you more questions about it.
Okay.
Because I knew you back then and I sort of lived through it. But there's just all these questions that sort of percolated. So if you haven't read the post, you might want to hit pause, go to rebelstorytellers.com, find it. Was it called The Gift of Failure?
Yep.
I think, from Monday. So read that and then hit play again and listen to me ask Brad about that experience. So for those people who maybe didn't read it or can't read or don't want to read it, just sort of sum up what we're talking about here, the actual show that you did.
Okay, so back in 2009, I was working for a megachurch here in town, Vineyard Cincinnati, and I was in charge of doing a Christmas production, and it was the third one that I had done at the Vineyard, and we had two fairly successful ones, and so this show, we decided it was going to be more of a avant-garde variety show where we would take the different aspects that we found interesting in the Nativity story and depict those in different ways. So we took like the Mary and Joseph having a baby story. We did that with a short film and had the three wise men. They were like modern day astrologers, and they went racing from this observatory with the news that this baby was being born. And they travel via bicycle to Mary and Joseph's house, and just a modern retelling of that story in kind of a comedic way. We had a dance number. We had giant the dance number was about trying to communicate, if I remember correctly, it was what Mary felt like being pregnant. there was like a big puppet thing with music of like on stage, these giant puppet heads. And
I remember those.
Yeah, I just don't even remember what that was about. It just didn't work.
So
that was it.
Yeah.
There's more than that, but I don't really remember.
So a creative telling of the nativity story.
Correct.
And so you put this on.
Yep.
And you had mentioned in the post that just like almost everything in life, you were under-resourced and, you know, didn't really have – in the scope of putting something like that on, you could have used more time, you could have used more money, all that kind of stuff. But you were ready to go. So it's, you know, it's opening night. And this thing is about to play. Like, as you're – like, what are you feeling at that moment? Were you feeling that this was going to be amazing? Were you feeling like this was going to be a catastrophe? What were you feeling before the play started?
Before that opening
– yeah.
The very first one?
For the first time. Were you feeling excited? Were you feeling like, oh, my gosh, this is going to be a train wreck? Do you remember?
I wasn't – part of it I do remember that like moments before the show started, Mark Haas was one of our volunteers. He did a bunch of stuff in the show. And he came in last minute to help. We didn't have time to finish painting the huge puppet heads. Like these things were gigantic, if you
right.
remember. Like,
yeah, they were huge.
The guys, when it was they were standing up, they were like 9 feet tall or something. And they didn't turn out like I had hoped because we just didn't have the time and money to do it. And they didn't have a finishing paint job. So then I was just like kind of freaking out about that. But he came in and kind of painted them up, made them look interesting. But I think the main feeling I had, and you know, it's interesting, I hadn't thought about it, but it ties in similar to what we were just talking about with this last week's podcast is what I did and do is when I have a creative project, I have a germ of an idea, a little start of an idea, and then I just invite people along to help me figure it out. And that first moment of the first night, it was like, I wonder if this is going to work. Because we had some rehearsals, but, you know, we're so last minute up to the final curtain opening that it was really, I wonder if that dance number is going to go okay. I wonder if Joe's piece is going to go okay. I wonder if people are going to laugh. But I wasn't dreading it. And then when it ended, I was like, huh, that kind of worked. There were some hiccups and things I didn't like, but for the most part, I was happy.
So that was going to be my next question. So beforehand, you felt pretty good, just wondering if it would all sort of come together the way you had in your head. And then afterwards, so the show ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember actually, I don't know which performance my wife and I were at, but I remember you coming up to me after the performance and saying, what'd you think?
Yeah.
And so what did you think? The minute it stopped, did you think to yourself, wow, that was awesome? Oh boy, that was a train wreck, or somewhere in between?
Well, I think I got a number of reactions. If I remember your reaction, you were sort of like, I don't know if confused was the right word, but you were like, I think I liked it.
Right.
And one of the things that we thought, so one of the decisions we made was, well, we always heard feedback in the previous years. Some people didn't like that it was too much comedy, or some people didn't like this. And we thought if we did the nativity story that everyone likes and we did it in a bunch of different art forms, at the very least, you were going to walk away and say, I didn't care for the puppets or the short film, but I really liked the whatever, the right. monologue or the song, that at least you could grab onto one thing. And so as a result, I think the show had a very disjointed avant-garde feel to it. And I don't think people knew – it wasn't like the beginning, middle, and end of the Nativity story. We just right. riffed on different themes, and it jumped all over the place, and it wasn't linear. Did I say that already?
No.
It was just kind of all over the place. And for some people, like there was a handful of people that are a little more artistic, or they got it and they liked what we did, and they were honest. They're like, oh, I didn't care for this part, but I liked the other parts. That sect of people got it, but that wasn't the bulk of the crowd.
So what was the bulk? So I'm guessing next day, next week, shortly after, you started getting some feedback that maybe that wasn't exactly what people were wanting. What did that look like? What were people saying about it?
I think the – I didn't have like – I wasn't running around trying to get a ton of feedback from people, but there were a handful of trusted folks that I would always ask. And it was pretty – before I really knew that the leadership of the church didn't like it, hearing the reaction of those few trusted people and watching them like not want to lie to me that they didn't that they didn't love it.
Right.
But not – they also didn't like – they didn't want to be mean about it or hate it, but just seeing like, oh – because what I was used to was them like was exceeding their expectations.
Right.
And usually them being like, oh my gosh, it was this. And when I didn't get that, I was like, oh, well, this is new. And then part of me hoped, oh, maybe they just didn't get it and other people did. But it wasn't a resounding like – it's not like I woke up to some huge onslaught of emails of people being like, that was horrible. Right. It wasn't that. But in my – probably I was mostly disappointed in like no one knew better than I did of what could have been better. Right. Like I looked at everything and I knew everything that was wrong with it. I think though ultimately it was a story issue and a structure issue that I didn't anticipate. I didn't anticipate that people would have issue with playing fast and loose with the nativity story and just riffing on themes.
Right. And it's always interesting. You know, it's – you can always tell – feedback, even if feedback is positive, you can tell it's just people not wanting to hurt your feelings. You know, it's like it's always – especially friends and family. You can tell the difference between something they really liked, like when people talk about this podcast and you're just like, wow, you guys love it.
Wow.
But then stuff that you've done, we're like, yeah. But they don't want to be like, oh, that was terrible.
So yeah.
They're like, oh, yeah, that was something. And even though they're trying to be positive, you can sort of tell.
Do you remember – when I asked you that, like, what were you thinking and how were you, like, editing in your head what you were going to say to me or what did you think of the show?
Yeah, I mean, it was – I think for me, it was sort of what you wrote in the post and what you just said about you're just used to succeeding and you were used to exceeding expectations. And, you know, it's not like any of us are professionals at – some of the stuff that we do, especially back then. And so if you put something together that's pretty good, it's like, wow, like how'd you pull that off? And up until that point, everything I'd seen of yours, I always had that feeling. It was like, wow, that, you know, whether or not it was amazing or not, it was like, wow, how'd you pull that off? And it was the first time where it just felt like it didn't have that same feeling, and I didn't really know how to put it into words. I remember you come up and asking me that, and me having this moment where I was like, do I – lie is a strong word, but do I say, wow, that was awesome? Just because you don't want someone the second a show ends to be like, oh, boy, that wasn't that great. Or do I try to give some honest feedback? And even today, I still – it's still that same thing. It was like it was just so different – and super creative. I mean, even thinking back on some of the things that you've been talking about, that you weren't expecting it. So it was like this weird, what was that?
Yeah.
But not, I mean, I've had a lot of things where I've seen the first time I've watched a movie and been like, what was that? And then I watch it again and be like, that was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I just need to rewatch it and I'll think it's brilliant. But there was definitely that moment where it felt different than what I'd seen you do and that sort of thing. And that's sort of part one. Part two, then, I think is where the huge kind of learning piece came in for you. So I think in your post you said, was it 3 months later?
Well, it was right around Easter.
Okay. So this, yeah, so months later, you're sitting in church and you probably haven't really thought much about the Christmas show since.
By this time, we knew that the leadership of the church was disappointed in us, disappointed that we didn't budget well for it. There was disappointment all around for sure. It wasn't forgotten, no.
Right. And so you're sitting in church around Easter, and the senior pastor, Dave Workman, is on stage, and he says what?
I don't remember exactly, but it was – so we were talking about Easter coming up, and Easter is a big time where you invite your friends. And he basically took a pause and said, I have to apologize for the Christmas show and admit that we know how bad it was and that we failed you. And he used we language, and he actually took a lot of the blame, saying that he didn't, the buck stops with him, but he didn't, you know, properly give us enough resources to do it. But the main gist of what he was saying was, you can feel safe inviting your friends to Easter because we're going to do better. And he felt like he needed to apologize for something so bad, because I think in his mind, and true or not, I have no idea, I'm not a mind reader, but he felt like no one was going to come to Easter because the Christmas show was so bad.
Right. And so to pause for a second, so if you guys don't know Dave Workman, former senior pastor of Vineyard Community Church, was there for a very long time. Dave and I know each other. You and Dave obviously know each other. And I think you would agree with this. You can disagree if you want. But I've pretty much told anyone I've ever come across in my whole life, I trust almost no Christians. I think a lot of religious people are just full of it. Dave is one of the very few people I trust, that I think he's genuine. I don't think he's full of it. I don't think he has ulterior motives in his faith. And he and I have a history. I used to work at the Vineyard. But through all of the ups and downs that you have with any interpersonal relationship or any working relationship, he's a genuine dude.
Yeah, Dave's one of my favorite, literally favorite people in the world. He's a friend. He's a hero of mine. So, and we're great.
Right.
But in that moment,
yeah. What were you feeling as Dave is saying this on stage?
It was one of those like movie moments where as he starts going into it, I'm sitting there and I'm like, this is happening. He's going, holy cow, he just apologized for the work I just did. Like it was the most shocking thing. I pulled out my phone and I texted him, knowing his phone wasn't on, but knowing he would get it afterwards. And I texted him, I cannot believe you're doing this right now. Right.
And part of the issue for you, and you wrote about this a little bit, was you didn't know it was going to happen, right?
Yeah, I had no idea he was going to do that night.
All right. And so even looking back, you can sort of see the justification in, you put on a show, it didn't go well. People might start to distrust the shows at the Vineyard, and here's this big Easter thing coming up. And so he was trying to frame it in a way to say, hey, if you didn't like that, don't worry. We understand. This is going to be great. So you sort of get the idea behind doing it. But not having talked to you ahead of time, probably the sting was much greater.
It was, yeah. I mean, I felt like it was my blood turned just like ice cold. You know, you felt that, like, I really felt like I was going to throw up. I was blindsided. And we talked afterwards. You know, he took me out to lunch and we had a great meeting and I understood where he was coming from and blah, blah, blah. But I'd be lying if I didn't say that I was just completely caught off guard and pretty instantly wrecked by the whole thing.
Yeah. And I was telling you earlier that I teach and I get course evaluations, and even if I get 100 amazing ones, if I have one bad one that says I'm the worst teacher ever and I'm a terrible human being, that still wrecks me. I mean, I've been teaching for a really long time. You just, like, there's something about that type of criticism that just messes with your soul. But you, I mean, this was in front of thousands of people, right? And you were sitting there. And so
yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people knew your role and people probably looking at you like how did that feel? And then how afterwards did you start to make sense of that and kind of put the pieces back together?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's been a while, so I don't remember every detail. I think the main feeling was just epic embarrassment. And I wrote in the post, like, what I started to realize, you know, in the years to come after that of doing some pretty hard work and soul searching, is that my identity, like who I was as a human, my self-worth was wrapped up in being that guy that impressed you. Whether that's with my creative work or my witty comment, whatever. But ultimately, it was about what I could make or create or say or write or do. And then when that went out and basically got demolished as a failure, it was just like, well, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Like, how can my identity be wrapped up in something that can be destroyed? Like, that logically, I knew that something had to change. I had built my house, you know, to quote the parable, on sand. And so, you know, luckily I had a good community of dudes that, you know, we would meet for breakfast every week, and we started a book called The Artist's Way. And it was like reading something where I was just like, oh, this is a thing. I'm not the only one to have ever experienced this kind of failure and humiliation. Like, this is something that artists go through, and it speaks against the lies that your ego tells you, that like, you're the man and your self-worth is wrapped up in you being whatever.
Yeah, I want to say the quote was Eleanor Roosevelt, but I might be making that up. But the quote goes, if you want to avoid criticism, say nothing, do nothing, be nothing. And just the gift of failure, and I think how some of us try so hard to avoid it at all costs. We want to avoid embarrassment. We want to avoid failing. And I've talked about before, I'm a perfectionist. And so part of probably what happened with us Friday was that sense of that version of the podcast was going to be a failure. And then people would see I'm a failure and on down the road. But it really is such a gift. And when you see people trying to live lives in which you avoid fail, you avoid losing, you just know they're being robbed of something incredibly valuable that someday is going to turn into a much bigger success, because you had to go down that road where you messed up and you felt embarrassed. And you, it's just this weird thing. Even in this moment, we were talking a little bit earlier off the air, that even though in the moment it was a terrible experience, it's like you almost want to thank Dave and, you know, for even doing it that way, because it really ramped up all the emotions that led to an even better experience.
Yeah, and I'm thankful that I went through it, and it really is a gift. And it was really hard, but like I said in the post, you know, like there was a good number of people and critics who get paid to critique movies who didn't love A Strange Brand of Happy. And if I didn't go through this experience in the way I did, who knows what that would have been like. And I now have this sort of theology rooted in practice that you learn how to do good stuff by doing bad stuff. Right. And you learn how to do great stuff by doing, you know, it's just that whole process. Like with this podcast, we have no idea what we're doing, and certainly didn't episode one, but we're going to learn how to in doing it. And hopefully people stick around. But to me, this is a living, breathing example of just learning how to do good stuff by doing bad stuff first, and being okay with that failure. And being okay with it is what lets you get to the next level in anything.
Yeah, and I am nervous about someday failing. I don't know what it'll be like, but it seems really scary. But you're saying it'll be a good thing.
I'm saying it'll be hard at first.
So we thought it might be interesting, since you experienced that, to volley back and forth a couple of really famous failures. Do you want to try that for a couple seconds?
Yeah.
And see, so just to prove that you're in good company, I'll start.
And prove that we're in good company.
Right. So I'll start. One of the most fascinating ones for me is J.K. Rowling, who wrote Harry Potter.
And Charlotte's Web, right?
Wait. You know what's weird is I almost said Charlotte's Web as a joke.
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding. As I was ready to say Harry Potter, I was going to make up a book to be funny. And Charlotte's Web went through my head. That was weird. But she tried for years to get Harry Potter published. Couldn't. Got rejected over and over and over again.
12 times, it says.
Yeah, 12 times. No one would publish her book. And then finally, she just kept trying. Someone did. And, you know, she was the first author to ever make $1 billion. And so that seems good. Like, if she would have quit, she would have not $1 billion. But she kept going, and now she has $1 billion. That's way more billions, right?
Way more.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good one. Stephen King, we both like his book on writing. Same thing, right?
Yeah, and he wrote Charlotte's Web. Abraham Lincoln lost 6 elections.
Did he really?
I don't know if you knew that.
No.
A lot of them were local type deals, but
it's because he's too tall.
Yeah, his hat. People hated that hat. But it's good that he kept running for office because he eventually became president.
President of the Glee Club.
Of the United States of America. And I would say many people would probably argue one of our greatest presidents and obviously one of the most influential because of the time period he was in. So that was pretty important that he kept running.
And didn't he failed when he tried out for the Last of the Mohicans. He didn't get that role the first time, right? Abraham Lincoln?
Now you're thinking of the actor who played Abraham Lincoln.
Daniel Day.
Yeah.
Speaking of actors, Fred Astaire, on his very first screen test, he went into MGM and did a screen test, and the director said he can't act, he can't sing, he's slightly bald, not handsome, and he can dance a little.
Now, if someone were to write that quote about me,
right?
Would you be like, that's pretty much it? if you replay that.
Steve can't act, can't sing, slightly bald, not handsome. But
okay.
You're no spring chicken, but you're not handsome. And I would say you can dance a lot.
Oh, so, wow. Thank you, Brad.
You know, I think it's easy sometimes with these sort of mythical stories of people like J.K. Rowling and Michael Jordan and all these guys that, oh, those were, yeah, that rags to riches. They failed and then they became blockbuster stars and blah, blah, blah. But the reality is we all fail in different ways every single day. And to look at those things as a gift and to know that you can recover from the embarrassment and you can learn from it. And then when you do, that's when the magic happens.
And I think people get lost in the failure or trapped in there or something. And I think even what I experience Friday is when I go to the bad place, when there's a failure and then I just get stuck there and I can't work myself out of it. And normally that passes for me. But some people it's like they live their whole life there. They just give up. They quit. They can't work themselves out of that feeling. And boy, if you could just – the lesson that you learned in the big stage and just bring that down into every little moment of life, like every little issue with a spouse or, you know, you're a parent. I'm sure you've handled situations poorly with your children. And you can either get stuck there or you can learn from it. And the next time around, you just do it better. And it's okay to feel bad. Everyone feels bad when they lose or they perform poorly. That's okay. But you can't get stuck there and you can't let it keep you from trying the next thing.
Yeah, I think the real issue is ego. And failure is, I think, the only thing that quiets the whisper of ego. And so it's a pretty egotistical thing when I go about my day. If I fail with Henry and I lash out at him and then I just think that I was in the right and he deserved to get yelled at or whatever, the way to quiet that whisper that just gets you stuck is then later on at night laying in bed with him and apologizing for it and then experiencing his very quick forgiveness and then building on that. So when if it comes to, you know, big creative work ventures that you're going to fail at or just in the day-to-day stuff, like fail quickly and then get in the forgiveness game on either side quickly as well.
Yeah. Or the grudge game is also fun, right?
It is in a not fun kind of way.
That's the worst kind of fun, the not fun. Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed talking about failure, your failures. Much better than talking about my failures.
Maybe someday we can get other people to talk about their epic failures in here.
Yeah, I think people would like that.
You think Henry Ford would come in and talk to us?
Is he? He doesn't live here. He lives in London.
Yeah, right? He lives in Detroit.
I always love the behind the scenes stories. So thank you, Bradley, for sharing your behind the scenes story with us. And jazz music.
jazz music. That's all we got for this episode. We'll see you next week. We're going to talk about our favorite Christmas movies.
Ooh. Mine are...
Nope, next week.
Oh, I have to save for next week.
Yep.
Okay. All right. See you guys.